Hello, welcome to another episode of Tombstone Podcast, a podcast where we talk about video games, video game industry, and really whatever we want to. My name's Devin.
Kevin.
My name is Dominic.
And Zach.
And today we will be talking about the Assassin's Creed series. Before we get to that, are there any games that y'all are currently playing, currently excited for, whatever? We'll start with Kevin.
Just kind of a short anecdote, but I do remember being on a flight recently and I was playing Mini Metro and I got something finally clicked with that game and I did really well. And it's a really interesting little game where it's, you basically impromptu make a metro system in like a city and they're based on real cities and it's really interesting. Each level has like a little gimmick, like it has rivers or whatever that you have to deal with, or close proximity things to deal with. And it's an interesting little game, and it's one of very few mobile games that I actually enjoy.
Nice.
Yeah, I've played it a little bit of it, and it gets really, really hectic
Oh yeah.
fast. You'll start off and you'll have two stations that you just have to bounce between. And the stations are all different symbols, so it kind of tells you where they need to go. So you can,
Yeah.
it's not necessarily that a person needs to get to a specific spot. They just need to get to a symbol.
Yeah.
And the quickest way that you can get them to that symbol, the better. And you'll start off with like a square and a circle, and you just gotta bring the people back and forth, and all of a sudden a second square will show up, and then maybe like a second circle, and then a triangle shows up, and then all of a sudden there's an X, and then you're like, wait, now, because what happens is like I'll get stuck with everyone going through one spot, so I can't load and offload people quick enough to get them across the map because they're all converging into one spot and there's not enough cars or whatever. But yeah, it's a fun game though. It's really, really interesting.
I found that my thing that really opened up the possibilities was making junction stations. So like you said, everything going through one spot. I make a bunch of tracks that like went off in two directions, meet back at another station. And so it's like, okay, well, if you need to get there's like five different ways to get there. And the game is smart enough to kind of figure out the best way to do it. So I guess my advice is make a bunch of junction points between your lines so that it can kind of alleviate that pressure. But yeah, it's a really interesting game.
But it sucks whenever you have to totally redo your routes because one goes across a like goes is on the other side of like a river and you don't have another tunnel to
Yeah,
get
you
through
don't
the
have a
river,
bridge or
so you
tunnel.
have to redo a whole line in order to get it
I've
right.
done it where I was like, I hate this design. Let me get rid of every track and redo the whole thing. And the problem with that is you can't pause the game. So people are like real time, like, I need to get to this station. Where the hell did all the train tracks go? So you just kind of, I'm just like, hold on.
All right, Dominic.
Yeah, so I've downloaded a bunch of different randomizers for the Legend of Zelda emulators. So I've been trying to practice on Ocarina of Time, on Wind Waker. I think there's one for the original Legend of Zelda, or the first one, I mean. And then I also did a randomizer for Pokemon Emerald. So just getting familiar with randomizers and how kooky and crazy they are, and maybe either recording or streaming them in the future.
Awesome.
Cool. Zach?
Yeah, I've been playing way too much Borderlands 3.
Of course.
Been taking up pretty much all of my free time. It's fun.
How is it? How's the combat and all that in it? It's pretty samey from Borderlands 2, or is it revamped?
It's pretty samey, but it also is better in some aspects. It just feels nicer. There's a lot more like physics and stuff involved, so me and Mike have been playing, and we're both running shotguns. And so you can just run up on someone and shotgun them to the chest, and it'll have enough force to knock them back onto the ground. And then you can sort of chain CC them with just shotguns, which is
Okay.
interesting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a proper sequel where it's like
Yeah.
it has all the same stuff that you loved before, but here's improved stuff and maybe like a couple extra bits.
Nice.
Well, I've been playing Celeste. I'm loving it. It's a really fun platform, a really hard platform. The story is really well done. I'm a sucker for stories about people dealing with their mental health issues, and Celeste herself, oh, not Celeste herself, Madeline herself, she deals with anxiety. And then you have Theo, who deals with more or less trying to like find his way through life. You have Oshiro, who is like OCD, not OCD, but I guess kind of OCD and like fixated on he has a fixation issue. He couldn't let go of his hotel and couldn't bring himself to leave it and whatnot. And I think that causes death, and he just haunts the hotel now. But it's really good. Really good. Really satisfying mechanics, satisfying story. The level design can be insane at times, but once you learn how to get through it, you're like, oh man, that's easy. I'm just bad.
Yeah.
Cause I just don't play enough platform games to be just pick it up and be good. My first playthrough was 8 hours and around 2,200, 2,300 death. So I'm gonna try to pick it up and start learning speedrun routes.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot about Celeste and other indie games like that, but I think it's just something interesting to say that like there's this super deep and rich story that they embedded into just a standard platformer, and I just think that that's really fun. Putting stuff in genres that seemingly don't have compelling stories, you know what I mean? Like, that's really cool.
You can always put a compelling story, you just have to find out how it works with the mechanics that you're using.
Sure, right.
All right, well, I think we're ready to move on to our topic. Today we're talking about Assassin's Creed, as I said in the beginning of the episode. I think we'll let Dominic take the helm. He has some notes. He's the one who's played most of the games. Who here has played the games? I've played about 5 minutes of, I think, the first Assassin's Creed game. Didn't care for it. It was just, the climbing was mash X, and then the combat was mash Y or something like that. And I was like, okay, well, this is not fun for me.
Yeah, and we'll get into that. But Zach, how much have you played? Like zero?
I've played zero, but I've probably seen like maybe 30 minutes of the second game, and that's about it.
Okay.
All right. And my experience is, and we'll get into exactly why, but my experience is I was pretty excited for one. I played it. I got two. I enjoyed it, and then immediately stopped caring after that.
Yeah, I did. I did Assassin's Creed 1. I did Assassin's Creed 2. And then I did Black Flag, which was Assassin's Creed 4. And then I saw some gameplay of some of the other ones as they came out. But then the one that I've been doing a lot of is Odyssey right now. But to experience-wise, I think that there is a lot to say about, you know, the first Assassin's Creed, and then the first two, Assassin's Creed 1 and 2. My sort of checkpoints for the franchise are Assassin's Creed 1 and 2. Obviously Black Flag ended up becoming a pretty big game changer, and then Origins and Odyssey were some other franchise changers as well, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But To kind of go into not the story of the game, because if for anybody who's particularly interested in the full story, I absolutely recommend there's a video on YouTube where they go into the entire situation, and it's I want to say it's done by it's by the leaderboard. They did like a 22 minute video, very thorough, but I'll just summarize some of the games as they came out. So most of the games, or just about all of them, are pretty much two stories told in one. You have, on one hand, you have the stuff that sort of makes the game enjoyable, in my opinion, that people just love to get into, and that's the history that the games are based upon. And then the other time, the next timeline sort of talks more about what the Assassin's Creed world building, what their sort of, not mythos, but what their sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just sort of their realm of storyline. But do we want to go into by release date, or do we want to sort of summarize the story as best we can? What do you think?
Up to you. You're the one driving.
Okay. I think it might be better to just do it by release date. Because that'll just be the easiest. Because we can talk about our impressions as we go. And it starts with Assassin's Creed 1 and 2, obviously. So Assassin's Creed was released in 2007. And the summary of it is sort of you play as this character named Altair, or Altair, whatever, however that pronunciation is. And after some failed assassinations as a member of the Brotherhood, you're sort of on a redemption mission that's sort of lined with different espionages and betrayals and things like that. And then that story is picked up in Assassin's Creed 2. And here, I mean, let's talk about sort of our impressions with these games, because Assassin's Creed in itself, even though it wasn't, even though it may not have been super enjoyable for some, it was still pretty innovating. So what were your, and we can start with, say Kevin, we can start with sort of your impressions on Assassin's Creed 1 and why it was sort of revolutionary for you.
Yeah, so Assassin's Creed 1 I was kind of excited for, just because the way they kind of described it, I was like, ooh, that's a bunch of neat ideas. You know, it's this idea of, here's my mark, I want him gone, I need to figure out his schedule, figure out his weaknesses, like when he's vulnerable, you know, what are his habits. And I liked the idea of kind of casing your mark, saying, okay, well, I need to talk to these guys, do things for these guys. Oh, there's a little bit of rumors about this. So I really liked that idea. Mm-hmm. And the combat, like what they showed of it, I was like, oh, if this is the baseline of the combat and there's more on top of that, that's great. The problem with that was that, you know, it wasn't really anything above that, so right. I had a problem with the combat. The combat was kind of lame. But then again, the combat is kind of almost a punishment for screwing up your sneaky assassination attempt, so do with that what you will. But I liked the idea of tracking down your mark, finding out things about him, and doing that. But it ended up being there were like four different kinds of side quests, four or five or so, and you just do them again and again. It would be like, tail this guy. All right, now tail that guy. All right, now tail that guy. You know, it had the same handful of things that you would just do one of the five things, pick it out of a hat, go do it, you'll get information on your guy. And once you've got all or enough information, go for your guy. And, you know, I liked that concept, but I think they kind of were limited in their first attempt at doing it.
For sure. And Devin, I know you talked about, you weren't particularly interested, kind of like with the point that Kevin made, that combat sort of felt like just a button masher, and the free roaming or the free running mechanic just sort of felt like you hold the R trigger and you just sort of run around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the free running, free climbing, whatever it was, it just wasn't really satisfying to me. Mm-hmm. It was pretty expensive. Like, as far as I can remember, it was pretty expensive in what you could climb. You could climb basically anything at all, which is pretty neat. But it was boring to climb everything. Like, to have to climb a wall was just mash a button and get up the wall. And there was kind of like no thinking behind it, no effort really. You just kind of did it. And it was just, I don't know, it wasn't that satisfying to me.
Yeah. Sure. For the uninitiated, the way it works is it describes it as the character puppeteering system. And basically, you have the A button, if you're on Xbox. The A button affects your feet, X button affects your weapon hand, B button affects your open hand, and Y affects your head or eyes or whatever, your sensory. Mm-hmm. And then right trigger gets you from low profile to high profile mode. So pressing A while in low profile has you walking slower and matching pace with everybody to not stand out. But if you hit the high profile button and hit A, you're going to start free running and jumping and climbing and all that. So that's when you're high profile and people are going to notice you. So what the climbing and free running amounts to is holding the R button, and either if you're climbing, you just kind of press A every now and then to jump. Or if you're running, you just hold the right trigger and the A button and he'll run and he'll just kind of figure it out for you. You know, it's like Zelda, he runs off a ledge and he just jumps the gap. That's fine because that's an adventure game, but this is supposed to be like this crazy cool, like I'm running and climbing and I'm super skilled. And you're not really getting to exhibit any skill. You don't really get to feel that at all. And like to another point is it's high profile. So they had this idea of if you're running around, you're clearly suspicious. So if guards see you running around, they're just going to be like, assassin, and go after you.
Right.
And so it's like, I'm just trying to get to the next goddamn quest point. I'm going to run to the next goddamn quest point.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say Assassin's Creed, and I think also Assassin's Creed 2, outside of story, mechanics were very introductory, and therefore I agree, even though I did really like those two games, they did feel boring to me to play. But experiencing the storyline and those different interactions were pretty cool, because it was the first game that sort of really told two stories in one in the way that it did. Like you have not in like you're in the present and then you're also playing the past, because that's done all over the place. But the ideas that they put in with their realm of stuff. So like the biggest thing with the Assassin's Creed games, while you're playing these two storylines, you're also sort of playing one side or the other in this really, really long, as in like history long, feud between these two organizations. So when you're running around in, you know, the Italian Renaissance or something like that, you know, you're a part of the true Assassin's Brotherhood. And the whole task, the whole point of the Brotherhood is to sort of stop the Templars, which is the other group, from basically just sort of stealing precious artifacts and influencing the masses, or manipulating the masses and stuff like that. Just sort of like anarchists in a say, but they have their own sort of, I guess more like brotherhood sort of dignity, other than just sort of, you know, vigilante combat. But the other side, the Templars, started out as that group. The Holy Crusades started up the Templars as a means to take these artifacts called the Pieces of Eden. And this is where, if you don't have tinfoil, I recommend going and grab some, because the story
weird.
The story that they put together, which is in summary outside of the games, it's so weird. It's so bizarre. Which makes it interesting in one regard, but as you play the games, you sort of, you sort of lose interest. And if you haven't made your tinfoil hat, you know, pause the episode, go ahead and get that taken care of. Because what happens is, these pieces of Eden and these different artifacts and all that, are remnants of an alien precursor civilization. Called the Isu, and it was made a lot more prevalent in the first two games, but then really sort of died out as the games went on. And the reason why is because the idea of this ancient alien precursor race giving us all these different artifacts and creating the human race and having all these different pieces of Eden and these vaults all over the world. And then you have these Templars that are trying to take them, and then the Assassin's Brotherhood is trying to stop the Templars. That sounds good for a game or a short story. But my opinion is, when you do that thing for 10 years, it gets old.
And it gets slowly spiraling into madness.
Yeah.
That's been my impression with, like, I'll see snippets of the later games, because, like I said, mm-hmm. I died off after 2. But I'll see little snippets of, like, I think it was like the ending of 3 or like a major pivotal point of 3 when my brother was playing it. And I was like, this shit is nuts.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy. And well, let me go into those games as well. So after Assassin's Creed 2, which is where a descendant of Altair avenges the death of his family by combating the Templars as an assassin. You'll see that a lot. A lot of revenge plots, a lot of the Templars killed my family, so we'll go assassinate them. And then you had Brotherhood. And in Brotherhood, it's sort of that Ezio goes to Rome and tries to rebuild the Brotherhood. I haven't played Brotherhood. What a lot of people were saying is that it's more of the same as 1 and 2, with some extra perks. And then there was Revelations, which is where Ezio goes to Altair's secret library and finds out about the Isu, and that's it. Like, that's also the last of what we see with Ezio, because then it goes into just the next sort of different plot lines. 2012, we saw Assassin's Creed 3. We see the grandson of Edward Kenway, which is in Assassin's Creed 4. It takes place in the American Revolution. And he's saving his Native American tribe from Templars that are coming in and taking over. Assassin's Creed 4, you have Edward Kenway getting sort of just roped into the conflict between the Brotherhood and the Templars. And then he ends up finding an Isu artifact. Now, this is where we'll sort of pause, because I loved Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Assassin's Creed Black Flag, mechanic-wise, it was all more of the same, except it introduced open world. And specifically, pirate-themed open world is usually always pretty fun, in my opinion. So if you don't...
How many other pirate-themed open world games have you played?
That's How many question. Are there?
That's a good question.
I mean, there's that multiplayer one, Sea of Thieves.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Black Flag.
Yeah,
and then maybe a Pirates of the Caribbean, maybe a Pirates of the Caribbean game, but
yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3, Pirates of the Caribbean World.
Maybe I could count maybe on one hand all of the open world pirate themed games that are out there. I think it's an underserved genre. It's not really one for me, but it's pretty underserved.
I guess that was mm-hmm. that was the point I was trying to make. It was good to see an open world pirate themed game, because there's not many of them at all. And I think at around the time of Black Flag, there really wasn't. I think maybe with the exception, you said it was in Kingdom Hearts 3 was the pirate thing.
Well, Kingdom Hearts 3 just got released like last year.
That's what I mean. So there really wasn't any. So it was cool to see that genre come into a game like Assassin's Creed. But if you care about the story, you know, on top of, you know, plundering different resources and being a pirate and stuff like that, you end up finding the observatory, which is an Isu artifact. And the point of the observatory is that with a drop of blood, you can identify exactly where somebody is in the world. What that has to do with Black Flag, really, that's it.
Found this neat thing. Let's not use it.
We find this neat thing. The Templars are trying to take it, so the assassins are going to kill it. You're going to hear that a lot. And it's rough because after Assassin's Creed Black Flag, you had a few sort of cool stories, and then it just fell off again. You had Unity, which is where you see more of the Kenways. No, not in Unity. I'm sorry. In Rogue, you see more of the Kenways, and you see a lot of characters that are actually in Assassin's Creed 3 because it's a prequel. And then in Unity, you see the French Revolution, and that sort of goes into the whole political espionage situation. And then you have Syndicate, which I didn't even know Syndicate came out.
That was the one.
Which one was Syndicate? Was Syndicate one?
That was the
North
one
America?
In England or whatever, and yeah. Everybody got upset that. Or wait, that I can't remember if that was the one that they got upset that there was no female assassins, or they put female assassins in it to kind of calm down that anger. I can't remember which that is.
I think it's the latter, because Syndicate, there's the two main characters, Jacob and Evie Fry. They're twin brother and sister.
Yes, now I remember. Yep. Yes, that was the one that they were like, why aren't there any female assassins? They're like, here they are, shut up.
And then they're like, yep, here they are. Which is disappointing, because when people go out of their way to create a female character after a lot of sort of uproar, it's usually just to sort of quiet them down, which is rough, because
I didn't come up with the idea of, oh, this is really cool character, and I think, you know, if she was female it would be interesting, or I just think of this character that way, you know. It's not an inspiration to make a character like that. It's, oh, I was told to make not a guy, so I'm gonna make not a guy.
Yeah. And then in 2016, we have Assassin's Creed Chronicles, which are two short, they're actually just straight up short stories. I think they're downloadable contents of another game, either that or they're standalone. I can't remember which.
They're standalone. They're both individual, small, standalone games.
Gotcha. And all that's really to be said about them, it just sort of adds more to the world building of Assassin's Creed universe, by taking place in India and taking place in Russia, and just sort of showing that it's all over the world, if you didn't already know. And then we have Assassin's Creed Origins. I didn't play a lot of Origins. I did see a lot of gameplay for Origins, and Origins was where they started to make a little bit of deviations, because keeping in mind, this is, I just summarized 10 years of Assassin's Creed games by saying there is a Templar organization somewhere in the world that's trying to take an artifact, usually kills a lot of people, and the people associated with those killings are assassins. And so the assassins go fight the Brotherhood, either take the artifact or leave it, and then that's it. So now we have a little bit of a separation. Origins takes you way back. I think the earliest that we had was the Renaissance in Assassin's Creed 2. So Origins takes place in ancient Egypt, which was kind of cool to see. And that's where you sort of, as the name implies, you sort of see the foundation of the Assassin Brotherhood start. I will give you three guesses as to how the Assassin's Creed, as to how the foundation of the Brotherhood started.
How the Brotherhood started? Are they like born from like the lineage of the Izu or something? Like I kind of imagine
it's not as intuitive as you thought.
Okay.
Okay. All right, Devin, you want to give it a go?
What is this? What am I guessing?
You're guessing how did so Assassin's Creed Origins, it's the foundation of the first Assassins. And just sort of in talking about everything that's happened with all these other games, how do you think it started?
Yeah, the Assassin Brotherhood.
How do I think the Assassin Brotherhood started? They are ordained by some Egyptian god.
Okay, Zach?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Not even going to wager a guess.
No.
So, as I talked about in the other games, it's sort of, the situation is, I'll reference Assassin's Creed 2, for example. Ezio, descendant of Altair, Ezio Auditore avenges the death of his family by the Templars. So what happens in Origins is the Egyptian monarch kills either a member of the family or like close friends or whatever of these two assassins. And so, of these two, just they're not assassins, they're regular people, right? Two regular people, and these regular people take revenge against the Egyptians by becoming assassins. So 10 years later, unfortunately, it's another revenge plot. Was like I said, it wasn't as intuitive as one might think.
All right.
Yeah, and it's rough because these are really interesting stories, and these are really interesting games, but there is a lot of redundancy.
You know what else is interesting?
Yeah.
These ads that we're going to...
The sponsor for today's
That's
video.
That's beautiful.
Nice.
So yeah, we'll take just a quick little break for some ads, and we'll be right back. And we are back, and Dominic is going to just keep going where he left off on the interesting bits of whatever it was.
Yeah, so
it's only been 30 seconds for y'all, but it's been like 3 minutes for us, and I already forgot what we were talking about.
So essentially what the bigger point was that if you are interested in the Assassin's Creed storyline, to me it is really interesting. However, it is so massive and expansive and convoluted that I'd recommend just either going through the games or just watching. Like I said, the leaderboard on YouTube did a timeline. Interesting story. It's really muddled in a lot of stuff. But I'll make one or two points about story, and then I'd like to talk a little bit more about gameplay before we get into Odyssey, because that was another game changer. The problem is, you have this dissociation between. You have the separation between you're in this part of early of either ancient early or modern history, and you're doing one or two things or another in this sort of simulated environment, which is cool. And then when you're sort of taken out of that simulation, it's just sort of the same situation of the modern day Brotherhood is still trying to stop the Templars, except the Templars are now Abstergo Corporation. Which I'm gonna just give some bullet points, and I just want to sort of hear your reactions and impressions. So, it's canon in this universe that the Templars or now Abstergo Corporation is responsible for a lot of things, namely the rigging the 2000 U.S. election to have George Bush as president. staging and organizing the war on terror as a means to seize oil from the Middle East.
Okay, well that's not too far off from reality.
What was that?
I said that part isn't too far from reality. It's just you're just changing who did it.
and a couple other things like. Apparently the Templars, I think it was also that the Templars were like behind like the crucifixion. Like every singular known as the Templars in like that early time, but then the Templars then like out after like maybe like in like the 30s they became Abstergo Corporation. But the Templars have been around for forever.
But the Templars didn't start until the
early ancient Egypt.
That's the canon for this.
Canon was so.
Like Templar is like they've pretty much always been around.
They're like it was like a proto Templar group. They weren't exact because the Templars were the Crusades, obviously, like the whole yeah.
Oh,
but
wait.
It's like yeah, but it's
yeah,
like
it,
organization.
That's why it's like.
Yeah. It was organizations before the Templars, just as in Origins there were organizations before the Brotherhood. It was just people who had connections to either the Isu and the Isu artifacts, and then people just trying to stop them. And then it became Assassins and the Templars, and then it just kept being Assassins and then became Abstergo.
So then where does Jesus play into all of this?
That... I actually do not have a definitive answer.
He doesn't guest star in any of the shows or anything.
But
in Origins, he's there and he's like, "Hey guys, so when are we doing this crucifixion?"
But let me see.
There he is.
So it's like we got Stanley Kubrick on this and everything.
Yeah, there is. I want to say it's the Assassin's Creed fandom. Yeah, the Assassin's Creed fandom, and it's their like storyline wiki. And
yeah, the wiki, yeah, they have their own wiki for it.
And I'll just, okay, it starts at 75,383 BC, also called 1923 Isu era.
oh.
And then it ends with, I'm gonna scroll all the way down. This is a long ass timeline. And it ends somewhere in 2018. Okay, yeah, 2018, because that's when Odyssey came out. So that's a lot of history. Let me just.
It sounds like you're telling me about
ancient aliens bullshit. Is yeah, all
it
I
sounds
hear.
Like you're telling me about Scientology right now.
Okay, here it is: April 3rd, year 33 A.D. Jesus Christ, wielder of a Shroud of Eden, was crucified by the Templars, who proceeded to take possession of the artifact. So Jesus. So Jesus had an Isu artifact and was killed for it, and that's
oh boy.
wait, did Jesus know he had an Isu artifact, or was it just like because it's one of those things where it's you ever like you ever talk to a kid and like they have something that's like really valuable and you're just like or there's a mission in New Vegas where this kid's running around with this gun that is who is it? The Helios Project?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a death laser from space.
Mm-hmm.
And you convince them, it's like, hey, that's just a toy. I'll give you like 10 caps for it.
Yeah.
Could they not do that with Jesus?
I don't know. Because there was.
They had to kill him for it. Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah. And if I understand correctly, it was. There was an organization called the Order of the Ancients that were predecessors of the Children of Cain. Is your tinfoil still on? Because we're... All right.
The Children of Cain, okay. So
the Children of Cain.
As in Cain and Abel.
Who were the sons of Adam and Eve.
So all I have to say is that... I'm just going to
yeah,
stop
please,
right here.
Please, like, yeah, please,
please. So... Christian mythology.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't say mythology.
It's okay. Yeah.
Christian, whatever it is, it's really boring.
Yes.
Why not? Like I wish a lot of these. The only reason why it's so prevalent is that Christianity is so prevalent in today's society. I think.
Sure.
What, like 40% of the world's. 50% of the world is some form of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's so profound to have these Christian ideas. Like if you look at Binding of Isaac is a really profound game and really sacrilegious game because, I mean, Christianity is a staple of American society at least.
Yeah.
But there's so many other... way more interesting mythologies and religions. You have the Hindu religion and you have the Greek mythology, which is expansive.
Yeah.
I wish games would take those and make something like if they took those ideas from those religions and those mythologies and threw it into a game like this, it would be really interesting, or try to like tie together a bunch of different mythologies
right
together into something that's like, oh, it was all aliens would make more sense, but to like just make it a really Christian focused thing is just kind of,
and also make it
lame?
Ancient aliens, yeah, to make
it's just really lame to me.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of that is just kind of people don't know anything else really. their target audience is like Americans, and Americans really don't know Hindu. Americans really don't know any of those other things. So like at that point you might as well just make up a religion called like Shwindu and just be like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's totally original and no one will know any better. But like that's why everything is it's relatability, because people, at least in marketing, they're like, oh, it's got to be relatable, people have to understand it. So they're like, no, make it Christian, make it Catholic, whatever, so that people understand it. That's the idea. It's stupid, but that's the idea.
Because the problem is is that they also made it about this ancient alien race that created the humans, and that the two human slaves called Adam and Eve escaped with an apple of with this artifact. And but like the basis of it is weird. It would be one thing to say that the Templars have been around for forever, and that the Templars then became this evil corporation and did this thing, and that's why the Assassins are so against it. And but they I think they just sort of took it tried to take it a step further by adding on to the fact that, like, oh well, they're also trying to protect magical artifacts or steal magical artifacts.
Do y'all remember? It was that Will Smith superhero movie.
Hancock,
where it turned out that, like, oh, him and that other lady who was also, like, they're angels, you know, and they're like, that's why they're superheroes, is because they are actually angels, and they go all the way back to, like, ancient Sumerian civilization, and they're a very big part of the, it's like, they almost, like, they're taking that idea where it's like this Templars and these this assassin brotherhood. It's like there's just these long feuding people where it's like, if you were to take Hancock and then make, like, okay, well, the devil actually has demons, and that's who Hancock normally fights. It's like, if they were just to take that, that is basically what Assassin's Creed is, but they're not superhuman, they're just there.
A lineage of dudes.
What would be even more simplified that would still tell a good story is, and I told this to, I told Joseph about this, and I talked to Chris as well. If you take out the entire idea of Abstergo and the Isu and everything like that, and you just have, you are a dude running around stabbing people in one or two different points of history, that would be a dope-ass game on its own. Like, the idea of running around in the Italian Renaissance and stopping these people from becoming too powerful, that's already an interesting story. I think the problem is that they tried to spread themselves so thin by also adding on to, well, it's a genetic simulation. And the reason why it's a genetic simulation is because there are these evil people since the beginning of history, that are, like, you know, like the whole thing that we just said, like the idea of the artifacts and all that stuff. If you just take all that out and you are a dude who is an assassin, it's a cool game. The problem,
I know, like early on, I mean, obviously there's this whole Edu, whatever storyline going on with this. Edu, whatever. I don't know.
It's Izu.
Izu?
Yeah, Isu.
Okay, whatever. Isu, whatever it is.
Whatever the hell.
I just heard three different pronunciations from y'all. That you have this whole thing going on, but as far as I know, like, it was kind of started as here's a historical simulator through the lens of an assassin to make it more interesting.
That was kind of the original idea.
And then I know, I don't know if it's like a big complaint, but like a complaint that people I've seen from people that play Odyssey is that they kind of throughout the historical lens and went totally towards the mythology, because they do use a lot of Greek mythology in Odyssey, and they throughout the, like, the historical context of being an assassin in this time period, and it's just like, well, now there's just magic and demigods, and it's no longer
It went a little too far.
Well, yeah, and
they jumped the shark.
Yeah, and see, personally, I feel the opposite, this is a good way to tie into to Odyssey. Personally, I like Odyssey a lot more, because it's a lot more of just how were the Isu artifacts used in early history. So they still have some of those, like, magical things, which is to be said of one, like, which is its own thing, but by taking out the Brotherhood, but by taking out the Assassin's Brotherhood, by taking out the Templars, and you just have all of these things that go on, whether it's, and if it is demigods, because I haven't played too much of the story yet, you know, to me, that just makes it a really cool action RPG that predates all of the nonsense that you sort of see in the other games, which is just my personal opinion. Story-wise, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's funny looking back on myself, my personal experience with Assassin's Creed 1. That game is pretty one note throughout the whole thing. It's mm-hmm. pretty focused on, you know, like the whole conceit is you're Desmond, I think is his name. You're Desmond in the future, who gets in this machine and it lets him relive genetic memories, which is like a whole whatever the hell I don't understand thing. But
science,
he's reliving
nonsense.
He's reliving the genetic memories of Altair, his ancestor. And so a lot of it's like you just kind of basically walking around in this Abstergo area and just kind of finding little clues, which I kind of liked that touch. It was a nice little calm area where you could explore and find out secrets and stuff.
Right.
And then it had this really serious, like, oh, we're in the Middle East and we're fighting for what's right and we're trying to stop the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very simple until the very end. Both of those stories take a really weird twist in the last like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like in the history one in the Middle East with Altair's story, he gets like betrayed by his like leader and he pulls out an artifact and just like shit just starts going off the walls and it's just like, oh, okay, he's got the apple, as they call it. And and like that just goes off the rails right at the last 5 minutes. And then Desmond like starts seeing like weird hieroglyphics on the wall and stuff. And I was like, all right, this just took a weird turn. And then like from then on, the entire series has been this downward spiral of it's all aliens. Everything is aliens.
It's all aliens, but it's all Christians. So it's all gods, but it's
all Christianity. But it's like we believe in Christianity, but really it's this secret alien thing.
Yeah. Because that was the thing. It was a big surprise sci-fi twist to say, oh, well, these simulations are actually really related to what's going on now, where you do have those elements of historical accuracy, which I did love. But then it turned into Altair opens an Isu vault and and stops and destroys the Apple of Eden and prevents people from becoming that powerful ever again. And then Ezio finds those pieces. And that was like the bigger point of Assassin's Creed 2 was like the collectibles in the game were those pieces of Eden. And then you create the apple, which is literally a mind control device, to summarize. And like that was like, oh man, so it's like sci-fi that's like history, like the future is based on the past or whatever, or the future. The past is based on the future, like timelines overlapping and shit like that, because it's like magic and aliens. And then you just sort of see that copy and paste, but instead of in the Middle East and instead of in Italy, you're in North America, you're in London, you're in India, you're in Russia, and then like you're just all over the world and you're just doing the same thing. And that's the problem was that the first two games and in my opinion now Odyssey are very interesting and cool games because again Odyssey sort of strips it away of the stuff that I honestly didn't like about Assassin's Creed. It's no longer cookie cutter. It's more along the lines of a standalone action RPG, that's just sort of connected by some timelines. But that was the big thing for me. Odyssey is its own, to me it's standalone. It has some connections to Abstergo or whatever because you're just dealing with the artifacts or whatever and how they were used in the beginning. But aside from that, I still haven't seen any like, oh, well, even though these are still Isu artifacts, we're also still fighting Abstergo in the future and all this other, all these other sort of elements of their story. But let's talk more about the gameplay mechanics, because we talked a little bit about it's a running simulator, you're running all around, you're stabbing people, But I think that engine in itself, or not the engine, but like that, those mechanics in itself were kind of innovating in Assassin's Creed, right? Like, we didn't have too many, we didn't have a whole lot of those, like, what did you say? It was like character, like puppeteering or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot of that. And we also didn't have a whole lot of the free running aspect of that Assassin's Creed brought. It's a shame because out of so many games, it's sort of the same thing, but it was still innovative, right? Like,
it was very innovative, but innovation does not necessarily mean that it is good.
That's probably the moral of this whole episode.
They've innovated in a lot of ways. Only like maybe two of those things were good.
Yeah, because I think that what they did was they took their formula that worked really, really well and just sort of kept trying to polish it a little bit here and there. Without changing too much of the baseline, until this newer game. Because Odyssey, and I'll let me just sort of summarize a little bit, some of these really, really amazing things that I just sort of fell in love with. In Odyssey, like, firstly, there's a mode of play, it's either guided or exploration. And guided, for those of you who don't remember the early Assassin's Creed, when you had a mission, you were literally given the pathway and you walked and you followed that same line to get from one waypoint to another. And if you didn't want to care about the game and you just wanted to just follow the digital beeline, they let you. In Odyssey,
that is a plague in video games that needs to be destroyed and left behind.
Yeah.
It's something that needs to go away with a lot of video games these days, is that whole quest markers. Quest markers need to, they're helpful, but like the way that they're implemented nowadays is just like, go here and do this, and then go here and do this, and go here and do that. It's really not satisfying to play these games that are just quest marker, like follow these quest markers.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that needs to die.
Yeah. And, yeah, and
I feel like as an accessibility setting, it'd be nice. Because some people have some sort of cognitive inability, whatever. But I feel like out of the box, you should be able to say, hey, go down the street, take a left, go there. You know, and like read directions or hints from quest logs.
It helps you get into the world. It helps you know the world more whenever it helps you get into the world lets you know the world more whenever you have to like read these quest logs and figure out where to go from there, because I like been replaying Morrowind a little bit, and it's like you have to read the logs, you have to read your journal because they tell you how to get to where you're going, and if you don't read it, you'll just walk and be like, wait, where am I supposed to go again?
Exactly.
Like you have to question these NPCs to figure out where you need to go. And it's like the same thing with like World of Warcraft Classic right now, where there's no map quest objectives. There's just like, you have to read it, and it says, oh yeah, you know, southeast of this town in a little cave is this guy. I want you to go kill him and bring me back his journal.
Yeah.
And like, okay, where's that? Okay, so follow the directions, you know, rather than just being told.
Literally, here's how you get there.
Go here, do this, go here, do that. Because then every single thing that you do turns into the same thing. And we'll talk more about this in Elder Scrolls, because Elder Scrolls turned into basically just that.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny that Assassin's Creed, you turn on Eagle Vision, which is the mechanic of just sort of being able to pick out different things and enemies and friends, and you literally got a beeline. Like, it's not just a quest marker. It's not just a waypoint. It is, here is the actual path, step by step, that you take to get to go down this road, and you go this way and that way. But but you're exactly right. Odyssey, what they did was, there is still quest markers. Like, there's still, like, you can open up your map, which is fucking massive. Odyssey is absolutely massive. Like, you are almost going throughout the entire Mediterranean. It's freaking crazy. But exploration mode is, instead of getting that handholdy map, there are two ways that you can go about it. Either one, you can just look at the bullet points on your quest log, and it'll say, this camp has been sighted south of this town, different things like that. Like, it's usually found on the southern tip of this island here, or something like that. Or, when you accept a quest from an NPC in exploration mode, you have the opportunity to actually ask them questions about it. So, like, the assassin's part of Assassin's Creed Odyssey is right now you're in this chapter, you have to assassinate, like, someone in military. So the questions that you ask are literally like, well, why am I about to assassinate somebody in military? Why do I want to go, like, what is his name? Where is he? Like, you actually ask the NPCs, like, you actually engage in a dialogue instead of, here's your absolute, like, 100% foolproof guided roadmap. It's like, yeah, he's located somewhere around this part of the island. And if you want, you have the option to ask, like, oh, well, is he, like, how many men does he have with him and stuff like that. Like, it's really, really interesting to me that the direction that they took, because it's very not handholdy. It's very much like, if you want to know more, talk to the NPCs. But if you just want sort of the general idea, just look at the bullet points of where it might be on your quest log.
That's interesting perspective, because I know almost nothing about Odyssey, but that sounds to me like that's what they wanted Assassin's Creed 1 to be.
Yeah, exactly. And also what comes with it being just sort of a new, fresh, to me, it's just a standalone action RPG. The dialogue that you have in the game, like I said, you ask about some more info, and it's not like. They tried to take a little twist on it. Like, when you ask somebody, oh, well, like, where is this? They'll be like, Alexios, you live on this island, don't you know? And then they'll tell you. So they kind of liven that up a little bit. But the dialogue or the choices that you make in the game can impact your gameplay. Like, if you choose, there's one quest in particular where you have to find a lost, like a spear for somebody. And you can choose to say, hey, I'm sorry, I couldn't find it, and just keep the spear for yourself. That, and, like, you can spare people, and that will either help you or not. It makes the game more vibrant. There are job boards, because you're a mercenary, so, like, you go to a town, and you go to, like, a little statue that has what looks like a clipboard on it, and that's it. Like, you're... It's just so much more into the action RPG, vibrant storytelling that doesn't handhold or anything like that. And I just thought that that's really cool. So that's why I want to say, like, if for anyone who's interested in the Assassin's Creed series who have either fallen out of it or who just weren't in it in general, I absolutely recommend starting out with Odyssey and then sort of go back through the other games.
But, I might have to try Odyssey because I do, like, last time I played it was maybe 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last time I played any Assassin's Creed game, so I definitely do want to go back, give it another try.
Yeah.
So I might buy Odyssey and see about what platforms can you get it on?
It's on Steam, but you can also get it for console as well. I don't think that it's out for Switch because it's a huge ass game.
I'll probably get it on Steam then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's try to get some closing thoughts on, because we're coming up to an hour.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's get some closing thoughts and whatever other things you wanted to quickly discuss real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess my biggest thing is I view the series as a whole because I don't have much experience with it. I played 1 and then 2 and then errant bits of other parts. I felt like the first one had an idea. It didn't perfectly execute on it, but it had some neat ways of going about it. Ultimately, I didn't view it as an incredible game, but the second one improved on it a lot in a lot of ways that your pivotal
installations in the series really capitalized on, but most of it started in 2. Like, what made Black Flag so interesting is that you can go around, you can, it almost had like this base building aspect where you can like make a trade route and get this money and that money. That sort of thing started in 2, just in a very, very bare bones way.
Yeah.
The exact method of storytelling, like the difference between 1 and 2, people, they kind of looked at 2 and said, that's how we're going to tell stories from now on. Mechanically, with weapon varieties and all this stuff, a lot of that stuff originated in 2, which is why I played 1. I said, oh, this is fun. It's okay. I played 2. This is pretty fun. And then I played the first, I think, 10 minutes of Brotherhood or whatever the next one was. I think it was Brotherhood.
Yeah, that's
played
right.
10 minutes of it. And I thought, all right, well, this is 2, but again. And then every time I gave a game a shot, it was 2, but again.
Yeah.
With the exception of Black Flag, which really amped up the base building. And according to what you've described, Odyssey kind of stands out, in my opinion, based on what you've been telling me.
Yeah, and I'll just lastly say, my personal recommendation, either start with Assassin's Creed 2, because it is truly considered the best of the series. Either start with Assassin's Creed 2, so you can see those sort of groundbreaking things. Even if you want to, see Origins, because Origins sort of ties into what they want to do with Odyssey, or just start up with Odyssey. And also, even if you're not into the story, or even if you're just not sure about the whole story and you want to know it, again, I recommend the leaderboard. Made a really, really cool video that very much helped out with this. And
if you have to start anywhere, I'd say 2, Black Flag, Origins, or Odyssey. Probably leaning mostly toward Odyssey, because you can play that and just be satisfied.
For sure, because of how standalone it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, you can play that and that's a full experience. And 2 has like a cliffhanger, and then like all of them really have a cliffhanger. I don't know if Odyssey has a cliffhanger. I don't think you do either, because you haven't finished it, but like it kind of stands on its own, at least.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's everything. I was going to try to continue our little outro thing, but honestly, I'm kind of bored of it.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was kind of fun.
All right. So if y'all like it, because last thing that we left off on was reviews for your Tombstone game, Tombstone podcast game. Mm-hmm. And really, like, kind of, I guess, like a next thing would be, either you getting in an argument over social media about what and what do you say, how do you respond to that argument, or a first DLC announcement. And we'll just, I don't know which one y'all would rather answer.
Let's go with social media.
Okay. You want to do the social media argument?
Sure.
Okay. So you get into an argument over social media, and it's not pretty. Kotaku and other like Game Informer and whatever, they definitely make an article about it. What was the argument about? What did you say? What do you, were you over the line with it? We'll start with Kevin.
My impression would be that I would have an issue, like I said, something that cut deep last episode. It was something that cuts deep that I know is true. Mm-hmm. But if someone came at me with something that I know is wrong, like, oh, it's just this, this, and this, I would definitely come back super passive aggressive, like, oh, I'm sorry that it's this, when really it's, all of these great things. I'm sorry that I made this. I'm sorry that I made it so great. I'd totally come off super passive aggressive. And that's kind of my style of, if I'm mad, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So that it would definitely be over, maybe not a criticism, but some sort of, it would be a criticism, but one that I wholeheartedly disagree with.
Yeah.
And that would kind of be the source of it for me.
I can easily tell like that the title of the article written would be like, oh, developer of Return to Elden tries to tell people how to play the game or whatever, or tries to, you know, tries to tell people what they experience. Like, you're basically like, oh, you experience this? Well, actually, you're wrong.
pretty much. It'd be like, I think the headline would be something like,
what, do you guys not have phones?
Developer of Return to Elden is, quote, sorry you're not having a good time with his game.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Dominic.
Let's see. So, I'm just trying to remember. So, mine's Fire and Stone is an action RPG that is littered with, like, paywalls,
yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the first third of the game is totally accessible. But the rest of the two thirds are not released as DLCs, but just like, if you want to play the rest of the game, you're like, you know, here's, I guess like DLCs, but released all at the same time.
Expansion packs, like full retail price expansion packs.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. And the biggest surprise was the last one was that everyone was totally into it.
Yeah, no one was talking about paywalls.
Yeah, until, and I'll continue the narrative, until now, someone writes an article like Kotaku is like, Fire and Stone, but just fire, or something like that. Like, or whatever, like it's, I don't know. And so they'll say like,
Fire and Stone, it falls like a brick or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. This is why we don't do that, because we're not.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, that was like total schoolyard, like Fire and Stone, but without. Anyway. but I guess like the biggest critique obviously would be that like, oh, well, sure, the game is like the story is fine and people are into the story a lot, but they're blind to the fact that like they're totally screwing over the company, they're totally screwing over their, like the player base, and they don't give a shit about their fans or anything like that. And I guess my only response will be like, have you seen, like, I don't know, were you there when Battlefront was out, or some like some dumb snarky like,
just
like,
whataboutism?
Yeah, what about it, like oh no, you can't say anything else because people who play Battlefront had it worse. It's
yeah
check your privilege, but you're totally using it wrong.
Yeah, oh exactly. I'll pull a don't you know who I am, except it totally does not work out how that's supposed to.
Oh yeah,
because no one knows
about
who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole thing was the whole, like, overpromise and then the game's, like, nothing, like the trailers or any of the announcements for it. So it would basically be people complaining about that, and I'd probably comment, like, something like, if you don't like it, don't buy it.
I think it's a good version of what I said.
I figured a good route for you would be to just, like, try to put blame elsewhere, like, oh, you know, we were pressed for time, and, like, the publisher wanted this, and they wouldn't give us funding for that. It, like, try to, like, cover your tracks to where it's, like, you try to push the blame away from you. But then really everyone kind of knows. It's like almost like with Anthem, where it's, like, no, that was not EA's fault at all. That was BioWare just being stupid. And it's, like, you try to go that same route of just...
Well,
no,
we were,
it wasn't me.
We were backed by the developers of Fire and Stone.
And... yeah, just try to fucking push blame. Okay, well, I think that's everything. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Tombstone Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you want to go out and play Assassin's Creed, maybe. I think I kind of want to do
it. I don't.
I'll probably get Odyssey just to see what it's like. Yeah. And then maybe after that be like, no, this is hot garbage.
at least you tried.
Yeah, at least you tried.
Place your bets now, folks.
But please, catch us again next week whenever we talk about some new exciting stuff. You can watch us live stream these episodes. You can catch it early. Ask us questions at Tombstone_podcast on Twitch. You can follow us. I'm gonna let Dominic take. I forget what all the social media stuff is.
Yeah, sure. I got you on that. So, like Devin said, our Twitch is Tombstone_podcast. For Twitter, because of, you know, character limits and all that, you can follow us on Twitter at Tombstone_pod. Instagram should now be Tombstone_podcast, just like our Twitch. And then our anchor page, which is our main hub for all of our episodes, is just straight up Tombstone Podcast. So go to anchor.fm/Tombstone Podcast. We're also, you know, for those of you who listen on podcasting or anything like that, we're on Anchor, obviously. We're also on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and Apple Podcast.
Just wherever you want to find us, we are there. We are ever present. We are omniscient, omnipotent,
omnidirectional.
We are haunting
omnidirectional.
All
right, well, we need to end this. Goodbye.
See ya.
Goodbye.